So where I come from, it's a bit proper to keep up with long, or to start with a long introduction. So I'll try to honor that tradition, but at the same time trying to maintain our time here. I really feel very honored to be here this afternoon, and a good afternoon to everyone here, a good evening, a good morning, wherever you're watching this from. It's a real pleasure for me being here with a group of really talented enthusiasts, innovators, and contributors coming all the way from Africa to Europe. Is not just a physical thing, but really a true reflection of what we are trying to do here in the open source community. And just this realization that we all share this basic yet fundamental principle that with openness and collaboration, we really build a better world, and the future that we are building it together. So it's really, really an honor for me, and many, whether you're from Cape Town, whether you're from Nairobi, whether you're from Frankfurt, whether you're from Munich, whether you're from a small village in Arua, like I'll be talking about, we all share these ideals. And so it's truly an honor to be part of this vibrant open source and SUSE communities, and open source in general. By the way, that's not a typo. Asante is a Swahili word for thank you. So again, in honoring my tradition, I would not want to go into the content without really being grateful. Just so many people that I'll probably not mention, but really just want to thank the organizers of this conference for an amazing job. Doug and everybody else doing a great job. I want to thank the Gecko Foundation, the open source community that are really, really, really doing a tremendous job. But most importantly, I want to thank really, from the bottom of my heart, I want to thank my friends and supporters all over the world that really make it possible for me to be able to travel, to come here, getting an air ticket and accommodation and all that from Africa to Europe is not something that is easy to come by. So I'm really grateful for that generosity. Because it not only helps me attend a conference like this, but also reach out to communities where I'm able to speak about FORCE, where I'm able to speak about different things that have to do with this very, very wonderful community. A little bit about myself. I am a developer. I don't want to say if it is by choice, but I've been doing quite a bit of work with what I call Jambula. Jambula, by the way, is a very sweet fruit in a lot of tropical countries. But it's I don't know why I found inspiration in that fruit, but it's so most of the things I work on, I call them Jambula. I've done a bit of embedded, like right now I'm really focused on the embedded stuff, specifically SoC devices like the Raspberry Pi. So I use Buildroot mainly to try and do a custom image that really is meant to be used by folks who want to create smart applications that are really on the edge. So something that does not depend on a lot of power. Something if the internet is off can easily be, you know, like you could have a backup solution. And we did a bit of a prototype, a bit functional, but a prototype project called Jambula TV that is out there. If you can scan my QR code for the contact details, you can find those projects. But very quickly also, I do a lot of contributing to the open source projects. I've done a little bit of DVB apps. I'm very much into digital audio multimedia, so I've contributed a little bit there. I've also, of course, like I mentioned, BuildRoot. I've contributed to iSinger. I think some of you were here last year. I did a talk on that. I also am a trainer. I love training because what it does is really mentoring that next generation of what I would call open sourcers. But I really love that, and it's really great to see folks who know nothing about, for example, Linux, and before you know it, they've really moved way up. So I do that quite a bit, and I've been using OpenSUSE quite a bit for my classes. So from day one, I basically picked OpenSUSE for those classes. I do a lot of advocacy, which means if I have to travel wherever I'm invited, I will travel to speak about specifically open source. And I've done a little bit of work with Jambula Labs, which is a company that I founded. I want to tell a story. I know we are coming to the end of the day, so it's not a bedtime story. it's what I call an open source or false story. That's me right there on the bus. Anybody here who has done, or out there who has done a bus trip in Africa, kind of knows the sort of things you have to work with, and you can call them challenges, you can call them experiences, you can call them, you know, rough time, but it really speaks a lot once you begin to internalize. So recently I traveled to a very small town in the northwest part of Uganda. You can look that up. It's called Arua, A-R-U-A. I'll just show that shortly. And to get there, you basically there's a bridge you have to go through. And this particular bridge is called Karuma Bridge. And at the time I was traveling, right before I traveled, like 2 days before, the ministry there basically announced, okay, we're going to stop anybody traveling using that bridge. Figure out what to do, either take a boat or, you know, use alternate routes. So basically it was kind of something that really was interesting. But for me, really, is the foundation of what I'm talking about, is what happens when a bridge is broken, and really finding that resilience to kind of go past that. So this particular trip of ours, I didn't cancel. We basically ended up going through a national park. This is basically, I was seated right in front of the bus. And that part of Uganda has like a lot of wild, really beautiful, if you ever visit, it's called the Makshon Bay National Park, Makshon Falls National Park. Do visit it. Lots of wildlife that you get to see. As much as as I was seated there, and of course everybody, the inconvenience, because you then have to travel a little bit longer, right? So another 2 hours extra. But it gives you a reflection of what resilience is like, knowing that at the other side, there are communities that are counting on a lot of external outreach, communities that have to go about their day-to-day businesses and all. And Arua is one of those very, very resilient and vibrant cities. It sits between the Democratic Republic of Congo and South Sudan. And then, of course, you have Uganda. So it's a very multi-ethnic town. But I really got, I don't want to say surprised, but really amazed at what is happening there, because you have open source actually leading the way in terms of innovations. So I came across, or rather this organization that basically asked me to speak there, did invite me to Muni Labs. They're basically like a community. They reach out to communities to provide healthcare. And right now they are using open source applications like DHIS2 and OpenMR. By the way, DHIS2 is quite a bit popular in a lot of African countries. Actually, a lot of ministries are using that to provide primary and secondary healthcare. So it's a very big tool being used at a lot of institutions. But Muni Labs is also using it, and they're doing some very great work. I talked to a group of students at Muni University, and really very committed, because they're trying to have them go into the community and impact those communities using the tools they learn. And so they use quite a bit of open source software also there, Moodle, Big Blue Button, obviously as their learning platforms. I want to share a couple of people that I really met, and really just to bring out this idea of resilience and innovation in places where you really don't expect. I met a very wonderful lady called Christine Yokoko. She was a student, but just recently graduated from Muni University. And basically, she'd been using Big Blue Button. And she tells, so basically, as I'm talking to her, so I'm asking her, and she tells me, well, we use it for online lectures, tests, and assignments. And so I asked her, and I said, what is one thing that you can say about it? And she goes, well, I can revisit recorded lectures anytime I want. It just really fits my life. It is accessible. It reduces my printing costs, because I don't have to move to a printing shop just to get a document. It makes my life easier. And so she also has a very good sense of humor, that I just wish the assignment page didn't lock up right before the deadline. She wasn't the only one that I met. I also met a young man called Nasibu Asiku. He's a software developer with Muni Labs, uses the DHIS health system, and they're basically tracking pregnancy-related health outreach data. He's not only really passionate about what he does, but also the idea that open source is an enabler. It saves them money. And so it gives them like more money to be able to do other things due to the less costs they have to spend. So these are just a couple, but really meeting folks like that are creating apps and like apps for folks selling even basic commodities, you know. So here is an app that does your banking, right? You've finished today's sales. Can you balance your books? I met a young man that is even actually trying to integrate AI to do that. I won't get into AI, but the idea being is that even amidst all those challenges, you have a community that is really resilient. And those really, what I would call challenges, are really more like gaps. And I've identified like about three over my time really, really working with open source in Africa, it's really about connectivity, it's about literacy, it's about capacity, you know. All these things exist, but in a form that might not necessarily be conducive. So in terms of connectivity, you have, of course, your internet. So very limited, very unreliable. You basically have to look at times when you're not going to be online. You have power issues. I mean, literally, as I was typing out electrically, power just went off. And so that's the sort of thing that that as a developer you would have to be thinking about. Geographically, just like I've shown, communities being cut off either because the roads are impassable for whatever reason. Literacy, and what I mean by this, so that you have three types. You have just the elementary education. So you will have most students usually if you look at and again I'm not talking about the affluent communities, I'm talking about really in rural areas. So the equivalent of grade 10 in most European US countries, that would be around senior 4 in our country, usually end up at this point, which means they just can't read, they can't write. So already that's a gap, right? Digitally, so you will have those who go all the grades all the way up, college, university, and even go on to do, you know, really great. But digitally, they kind of like averse, like I don't really want to do anything with technology. And then of course you have the proprietary. That actually is a bit more interesting because a lot of proprietary companies spend a lot of money to try and give incentives to a lot of our governments, and so it becomes very difficult to, as an open source community, if you're trying to sell or trying to sell the idea that open source is better because they've gotten a scholarship to go to China or to wherever, to the US, they've gotten a scholarship to go to Germany because proprietary company X gave them the money, right? So it's like we're having to compete with that, and so it's not something that is easy to overcome, as I'll keep mentioning, but I think it's doable. So you materially, in terms of capacity, you will find that even basics, you know. So if I'm thinking of OpenSUSE on a Raspberry Pi, right? One, I need to get a Raspberry Pi. So there are all those logistical things I need to worry about. Where do I pick it up from? Where do I buy it? You know, and do I even have that money to spend on something that is going to be just for testing? So there is that. Technically, the training. So there's not much in terms of like awareness of what open source software is, what Linux is, what OpenSUSE is. There's not so much of that awareness. So I spent quite a great deal of time explaining to people what it is and the fact that it's even better in most cases. Financially, most of us, I mean, you have to survive, right? You have to put food on the table. So for a developer, it's not just as easy as simply saying, I'm just going to switch to open source. They have to take those considerations. They have to put those things into consideration. So the fallout because of this is, one, you get a failure to collaborate on open source projects, so then you don't have guys that look like me showing up in forums or like places where we do our thing. you will find that I can't run a server, because if I start running a server, any minute power will go off, any minute internet will go off. So I have to buy a VPS in Berlin, or I have to buy a VPS in the US. So there is that, because of frequent outages. Of course, they had to reach areas like I've just been illustrating. In terms of illiteracy fallout, of course, you would then find that they are poor, like the open source tools are not really as at par with what you would want a piece of software to look like. There is limited documentation. So then also you have folks depending a lot on the external factor, the external people for training. In terms of capacity, of course, creativity and innovation gets stifled. There's loss of interest in contributing to FOSS projects. Developers and communities get disempowered. And we basically lose that community. So the reason why I really chose this topic is really to try and say, as an open source community, how do we catalyze community empowerment? And I need to look at the clock, because I get so passionate about this. In terms of what are we doing, or what can we do that actually can make an impact? So I came up with about three things. One of them is enabled resilience, and I'll explain what that means. I like that word a lot. We use it a lot in Africa. A resilience. People are basically going through, just like I was describing in my story there. So you have all these challenges. So you have a bridge that is broken. You have a bridge that we cannot cross, right? So we ended up going around. We didn't take the boat, but we ended up going around, and we went through the national park, which ended up being a bus safari for me, which I liked. The idea that how do you then enable that? How do you make that possible in terms of software, right? Empowered learning. So if you have folks that have dropped out of grade 10, as an open source community, what do we do, right? You know, they can't read and write, right? And then having that, how do you amplify the sort of backing, you know? And so these are things that I feel might be able to push us a bit ahead in terms of from where we've been. And in terms of enabled resilience, I feel like that would really mean when you're, as a software developer, as you're coding, think about your app. Think about what you're doing. If power went out, right? I mean, don't just imagine that it's just here, you're going to have the power always here, right? Just think about it. If power all of a sudden cut off, you don't have a UPS, you don't have, you know, what happens to your routines, right? What sort of shutdown process, what sort of backup system, what sort of, you know, think about that. Are you localizing? And we've talked about this a lot in the open source community, localizing languages, you know, making it easier for people to read, you know, to read the application, to read the documentation. Being able to back people, not so much as a giveaway, as a handout, but simply saying, look, this person has this challenge. They need to host a server so they can spin up an open source VM somewhere. They don't have those resources. They can't afford the $5 a month or, you know, 10 euros a month, wherever it is, to basically do that. You can partner with the developer and say, okay, don't worry about that. I will cover that. This goes a long way. It's not, because these guys are not, they're not really looking at handouts. They're simply saying, look, between the choice of having to host that, that setup there, versus me focusing on my family eating, I'll probably go the other route. So that's what I mean by amplified backing. It is, and I feel like it's a new way, or it's sort of like a revised way of how we need to be thinking. And it's not necessarily like you're simply handing out, you're simply amplifying and saying, I will back you up, guys, we'll back you. What is it in terms of what you would need? Do you need hardware, right? This is what we can do for you. So I feel like that is an area that is so important and that keeps most folk in a lot of these areas kind of like, you know, forget it, I'll focus on other things. Code equitably, right? That's what I mean, you know, think of your users. I mean, who knew Big Blue Button would be used in Arua? Very, very remote area, but it's like a life, it's a lifesaver. Who knew DHIS2 is being used to save folks? Eh? So you are making a difference. You are making a difference with your code. So, yeah, I know sometimes we joke around. We're like, yeah, you know, you put in your comments, you do. But it is actually, it is really making a difference. So that's what I mean by coding equitably. Being code mentors, you can mentor. I mean, a lot of these young people, I did a session with them, and I was trying to do like even something as simple that you take for granted, Git clone, Git pull, basic command. You can look at, you know. So it doesn't take much to be able to make that that mentorship happen. You don't need an organization. You don't need to do just something like that. Empowering. And again, that's really like similar to the backing, in a sense that there are apps already that are being built, open source apps that are being built by these guys in very rural places. You know, look at their code. Tell them, no, you probably need to be doing this. You need to do that. You need to do this. So it could really change. Like a lot of like the life of someone, just simply because of just the 2 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever you spend on that. So how, like, what is the strategy? And that's always like the thing. Everybody's like coming up with all kinds of strategies, right? So I came up, the next slides are really more like quotes, eh? Know the leaks, right? So these are African proverbs and quotes. You know, as someone who has lived in a roof that is leaking, I know that you will know where not to put that mattress, right, at the end of the night or at the beginning of the night, because you know, okay, it leaks right here, right? But what I mean by that is you already have lots of, it's not just me, lots of developers and open source at that in many countries in Africa right now. They know what is happening. They know the terrain. Use them to make that impact. When the music changes, so does the dance. Again, we are saying, what can we do as an open source community? We need to, whatever we've done really isn't getting us to like where we're empowering as many people. I feel we can do better, and I'm urging you, and really, as I would say, call to action is to really say, you know, we can change the way we've been doing it, you know, and because the landscape is changing, you know, and there's just so much that is happening, and so the models of support of yesterday no longer do work today, so we need to be adapting to that. Why bother? I mean, you can say, well, you know, like, why bother, right? Again, the child who is not embraced by the village will burn it down to feel its warmth. Because eventually you will have those developers ending up having to do other things that may not necessarily be positive in terms of the ecosystem. So that child needs to be looked after. And anyway, no one should really be left behind. That's really our mantra, and that's something I'm so proud of. This is not even on script, but this is something I'm so proud of. Being in this community, we really embrace inclusion. But we need to sell that message. We need to be telling that message. A chattering bird builds no nest. I know that because I talk a lot. So I have good intentions, but they are not enough. We all have intentions. We must act. We must really say, okay, what do we do, right? And I feel like that time is really now. And someone once famous said, it always seems impossible until it's done, right? But I do believe that through collaboration, even the biggest challenge can be overcome. So I really do feel that we are at a place where we can really do great. These are just, I'm not really so much one that, I just met, I hope Martin won't mind me mentioning this, but we can make a way, right? We can do make a way, you know. It's not a mountain. I mean, getting someone a Raspberry Pi board, that's not a mountain, right? You know. To me, it might be a mountain. To that person, it might be a mountain. For most of us, it might not be a mountain, right? So I feel like it is doable. So let's connect and build that bridge together. So thank you so much for your attention. I hope you support the ecosystem that is going on all over Africa. Folks are doing really, really very interesting things. And so we're trying to say, okay, we can bridge that gap. Thank you so much.
Yeah, hi, thank you for your presentation. Mm-hmm. I was wondering a little bit from which side can the initiative start for different problems, let me say.
Okay.
You talked about translating. I think that's something which the community inside a country can do best.
Yes.
They know the language, so they don't need much external help for the translation. Sometimes, or you mentioned a lot of things where the outside community should engage to see the problems, to help for those problems.
Yes.
But is it sometimes also that, let me say, people in your country fear to ask a question because they don't know, am I allowed to? Because typically I think if they do, they will very often get help and an answer.
Exactly. And that's, thank you so much, Martin, for that. Because I really, and when I travel, this particular group of students that I met in Arua, I really challenged them on that. But I think also it's a culture, there's a cultural context to where I come from. I'm a little bit wacky. I grew up in the US, studied in the US, so there's a little bit of that influence. But so I think it's also a cultural, we tend to not want to be so, you know, like that straight up, right? That, okay, I need this or I need that, right? So I was challenging them and I say, look guys, we can sit here and you're saying you're coding in your little world, that's not going to help you, right? You need to, if you need to translate, you're seeing online folks are saying we need translation here, step up, right? So that's now where the role of an advocate comes in. I'm not trying to pitch for myself here, but that's where now someone like me who is going around telling folk, you know what? Send that email, send that, put in that contribution. Nobody's telling me to get online. I was joking with Lobos that sometimes I'll pop up in his presentations and it's like, I wonder who is that guy is and what have you. But like, I will take that initiative. But we would need to be explaining that to our people, to tell them that it is okay, it is a community. Those are our values, and so that's what I'm trying to do, because you have a lot of stuff like languages, Swahili, Luganda. You have so many languages in that part of the world that could really be put. I was thinking of doing, but you know, you get to a point where you have so many things on your plate, you say, I can't really now also again translate, I can't again also do this, right? So that's what I feel I'm trying to do, is to really encourage those who are really starting this journey to do.
Thank you again.
You're welcome, thank you.